Hello, everybody. It is Saturday in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. My name is Adam Bittner, assistant sports editor for multimedia at the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, back for our weekly Steelers mock draft video with our Steelers insider, Ray Fittipaldo. Ray, how are you? Excited to talk mock drafts today.
Yeah, absolutely. We're coming down to it. What, one or two more of these videos, and then we'll be talking about the actual prospects they did draft. So buckle up. It's coming soon.
Yes, I will be on one end of our live stream that we're planning for the first couple of nights of the draft. You'll be at the Steelers facility, so I'm looking forward to getting your live reactions from there. In the meantime, we're going to get into the Steelers mock drafts as they stand today, some of the most noteworthy picks for them on the internet this week. Before we do get into that, just want to thank our primary sponsor for this episode and every episode of the Steelers mock draft tracker video, Pella Windows and Doors of Pittsburgh. There's no better place to get new windows and doors installed in your home than Pella, who can help you save on energy costs year-round. Schedule a free in-home consultation with your local Pella Windows and Doors to find the right product for your home and budget. Give them a call at 866-593-1560 to discuss your project further. That's 866-593-1560 to get started planning on your new windows and doors installation with Pella Windows and Doors of Pittsburgh. Ray, three picks this week I saw for Graham Barton of Duke. He was a tackle for the Blue Devils, for those who are unfamiliar, is expected to play inside in the NFL. A lot of people pointing toward center, but also a possibility to play guard. Mel Kiper Jr. was kind of the lead name in the mock draft industry this week that had him going to the Steelers. He has him ranked ahead of Jackson Powers Johnson, the name you and I have talked about for weeks as possibly the top center option for the Steelers. You were on the call with Mel Kiper Jr. today. He did a conference call with some other reporters. Can you add any context to that pick? And is there any meaningful dispute in your mind about who the number one center is in this class?
Yeah, listen, I think people are going to have different opinions on the top three guys. You know, some guys like Mel Kiper have Barton going first. Others have Jackson Powers Johnson. And even a few, it's Zach Frazier. So there is not a consensus on who the top center in this draft is. And Kiper, as you mentioned, is one of the people who has Barton going to the Steelers at number 20. And his reasoning was the succession plan the Steelers have always had at center and how they've lacked there in the last couple of years. You know, they went straight from Mike Webster to Dermonte Dawson. And, from Dermonte Dawson pretty much to Jeff Hardings and Jeff Hardings to Justin Hartwig and then to Marquise Pouncey, of course, you know, and that was a long line of successful NFL centers, Hall of Fame centers, borderline Hall of Fame centers. And what the Steelers have had there since Pouncey's retirement has really been below the line. You know, the last 2 years with Mason Cole, that experimental year with Kendrick Green was a disaster as well. So Kiper's reasoning was, and he's a little bit by himself on this, I'll admit to that, but his reasoning was center is a very important position on the football team. The Steelers need a guy like that, so they should take him even if a guy like Barton isn't the best player available on their board. As you know, Adam, this tackle class is very highly regarded, so there's a much better chance that the Steelers are going to draft a tackle at number 20 just because they have more value than center. So, like I said, Kiper is a little bit out there by himself with the Steelers drafting a center at number 20, but that was his reasoning.
Yeah, and certainly a center that's not Jackson Powers Johnson, because I know there's lots of fans of that idea. I don't sense the same enthusiasm from Steelers Nation for Graham Barton. I think there's a small subset of fans, but I think it's small. And we're going to talk about that tackle class in a little bit and how it kind of shapes the draft and the way I kind of look at it like you do of there's just not a whole lot of quality down the line. And that would make it difficult for the Steelers to go in any other direction than tackle. But I want to talk a little bit more about Barton before we move on to that. Specifically the fact that he could play guard in the NFL. That's a viable option for him. Do you think the Steelers look at that with James Daniels' contract expiring after this season, Isaac Seumalo after next season, and say, hey, let's take this guy now, let's stick him inside, let's see how that goes. And if it doesn't work out, well, hey, maybe we get a David DeCastro type, someone who can hold down one of those guard spots for a decade or more. And basically you can kill one of those birds eventually based on how things shake out this season. Do you think they take that into consideration compared to a guy like Jackson Powers Johnson, who looks like more of a pure center?
Yeah, listen, the Steelers love versatile offensive linemen. They always have. It doesn't matter which regime you're talking about, Colbert or Kahn, or, you know, obviously Tomlin's been the head coach here for nearly two decades. That's kind of been a calling card for them. You know, guys who can go from right tackle to left tackle, guys who can play center and guard. And in this case, Barton really can play all three. I don't get the sense, just looking at the players they've brought in for pre-draft visits, Adam, I don't get the sense that they're worried about the succession plan with Daniels and Sayamalu this year. I think maybe in the back of their minds, they're certainly aware of that organizationally, but I don't get the sense that they're going to draft a guard this year that, you know, who could take over for them, you know, if they don't re-sign Daniels. That could very well happen that, you know, if they draft a guy like Barton, maybe his best position does end up being guard, but I don't think they're going into this thinking they need to find a successor for Sayamalu or for Daniels. The one interesting thing about Barton, though, is his RAS score. And for people who aren't familiar with the RAS score, it basically it tells the tale of what type of an athlete that you are at a certain position. And, you know, people out there can Google it and, you know, you'll find plenty of information on it. But the interesting thing about Barton is if you look at his RAS score for a tackle, you know, it's pretty much average. And he played tackle for 3 years at Duke. Very good. Some people think he could play tackle in the NFL. But if you look at his RAS score and you convert him to a center, he's the most athletic, the most elite athlete among the centers in this draft. So there is that, you know, that's why people are projecting him, honestly, that he's going to be a center because he's got elite athletic traits to, you know, make him a really good prospect at that position. Now, Steelers fans are going to sit back and say, do we really want another guy who's going to convert? You know, Kendrick Green was a guard at Illinois. He was a disaster at center. I don't get the sense that Barton is the same type of player. You know, Barton, pretty much a late first, early second round projection by almost anyone doing these mock drafts and these top 50 boards. And Kendrick Green, you know, was a third-round pick, middle third-round pick, who had short arms, and there was, you know, some debate about how he was going to turn out in the NFL. So, you know, I think Steelers fans have to get over that if it does happen, but that's just a little bit of background on Barton and I think why he's intriguing to a lot of teams and perhaps even the Steelers.
Yeah, I agree. And you know, I don't look at it as could he be the successor to the guards. It's just a question of, well, if it doesn't work out, at least there's kind of a fail-safe here that maybe wasn't there with Kendrick Green, if that makes sense, where you can say, hey, we can use this guy in other places. Even if he's like an average tackle, that can be a useful thing over a period of time. So I just wonder how much that enters into the calculus for the Steelers. Speaking of tackles, Ray, I want to get into Blake Fisher. He was on the Steelers' list of visitors this week. I talked about him a little bit with Brian last week, but he's one of those few guys who is kind of seen as a day-two pick at tackle, who scouts seem to have a higher ceiling for than what the Steelers already have in Dan Moore Jr. And some of the guys that they've had in the recent past. I know you're leaning heavily into the idea of them taking a tackle in round one because those guys at the top are so good. I'm right there with you. But how viable do you see Fisher as an alternative that maybe opens up the flexibility for the Steelers in the first round to go in a different direction than tackle?
Yeah, so absolutely. So if the Steelers draft a center at number 20, or if they draft a receiver at number 20, then if you still do want to get a tackle, and I definitely think they want to get a tackle early in this draft, Adam, because there's that desire from Omar Khan to flip Broderick Jones from the right side to the left side. He said that at the combine. I think his exact words were, we want to do that sooner rather than later. So read into that what you will. But, yeah, certainly, if the Steelers want to wait on a guy like Fisher, would he be there at 51? Yeah, I think so. Would he be there at 84? Maybe. I don't know. But once you start getting into the third round, you know, for tackles, most of those guys are I don't want to call them projects, but I don't really consider guys drafted after the second round as potential plug and play guys. So I think if you're looking to read into Omar's words and he wants to do that sooner rather than later, I think that tackle has to come either on day one or on day two of the draft, and preferably early in that second round at number 51.
Yeah, I think you just end up in a position where, Dan Moore, you're not really – how much are you upgrading on him? Or how much are you putting someone in a position where they're not going to be able to overtake Dan Moore in the year ahead and you've invested a premium draft pick? It gets fuzzy for me, and that's why I think Blake Fisher is such an interesting kind of pivot prospect for the Steelers draft, because I think he's one of the few players that can make it make sense if you go somewhere other than tackle. So he's definitely, a guy that's shooting up my list. And I asked this specifically because Chris Trapasso of CBS did a mock where Terrion Arnold was the first round pick in his seven rounder. Then Cedric Van Pran at center in the third round, with, I think, Blake Fisher sandwiched in between. What do you think of that trio as like a top three of picks? And I think you could probably play with whoever the first round pick would be. Maybe it's a receiver, maybe it's another a corner, something like that. But let me just pose that to you, Ray. If they end up with a first round pick of maybe the best available player at whatever vague position of need you have, Blake Fisher and Cedric Van Pran Granger, is that a success in your mind?
Yeah, I think Van Pran Granger in the third round is probably where he has value. I don't think he's a second round pick. So again, anytime you're getting a guy in the third round, there's some question there. Okay, is he going to develop, or is he going to be a guy who maybe takes some time, or in a worst case scenario, doesn't pan out for you? And that's the last thing the Steelers want to happen when they have such a big hole at center. So, Arnold would be interesting to me. He didn't run great at the combine, but I think he's still projected as one of the top two corners. I think it's either him or Quinyon Mitchell. If you look at some of these mock drafts and these big boards, Mitchell's moving up. I saw he was number 12, I think, in a recent mock draft that I was looking at. Maybe it was Mel Kiper's. So maybe Arnold does slip a little bit. Does he slip all the way to 20? People might be thinking that because of the 40 time, but I think he's too good of a player. If he's there at 20, yeah, maybe that's something that they can't turn their backs on, but I don't think he's going to be there at number 20.
Yeah, I will say in most of the mocks that I tracked this week, he was going higher. But I think he's probably a useful case of best available player versus drafting for need. Do you want the tackle because that's what you need, or do you want a player like Arnold, who I think CBS had 12th on their just big board of the best prospects in this draft? And it's a debate I was having with Paul Zeiss yesterday, or excuse me, on Thursday with our weekly video, is have the Steelers put themselves in a position where they have too many needs to draft the best available player? Do you worry about that at all, Ray?
And I don't think the Steelers do either. I think they have so many mock scenarios that they've gone through that, listen, if they have to use one of their third-round picks to trade up to get a guy they want, maybe there's a free agent out there that they can sort of backfill, like an inside linebacker or corner. The scenario that I always bring up is, Patrick Peterson's still out there. He's still unsigned. So, if the draft doesn't unfold the way you want and you don't get a corner, say, in the second round or even the third round, then maybe Patrick Peterson is your best option to come back. I don't think this is going to happen, but let's say they don't get a receiver that they want on the first 2 days of the draft. There's still stuff out there that maybe the Omar Khan is trying to wheel and deal, and maybe – he can pull off a trade after the draft, or on draft day, day two of the draft. If their board doesn't line up with receivers, maybe he could do something at that point. So there are all different kinds of scenarios I think that they go through. People will say it's a disappointment if they don't come out of this draft with a center, a right tackle, a receiver, a corner, a defensive tackle. I just rattled off five positions.
That's too much to do with one draft.
Yeah. How many premium picks are there? I think they have two in the third round. So 1, 2, 3, 4. We're talking about five picks in the first four rounds of the draft. You're not going to get starting caliber players at number 98 or number 119. You might not even get that at number 84. So they have all of this worked out, you know, in various scenarios. So people, fans out there might, you know, panic about it, but I don't think the Steelers will.
Yeah, that's fair. And I want to talk through the receiver situation a little bit more because there's some reporting out there from Jason Lockenford that the Steelers are still kicking the tires, possibly on some bigger names. Before we get into the receivers, just want to thank another sponsor, Pitt Johnstown. It's a Pitt quality education with up close and personal learning, a top ranked Northeast public college by U.S. News and World Report. Generous scholarships and financial aid are available, located on 655 picturesque acres with easy access to the city center, including shopping and dining. It's a vibrant campus life with an active D2 athlete community. Check out Pitt Johnstown today. Ray, I guess start this conversation with we're talking about receivers. There's also the suggestion that, you know, Brandon Ayuk, Deebo Samuel, maybe even Justin Jefferson are some of the names that people have connected to the Steelers in trade talks. What do you think is more likely at this stage, that they end up investing a first or second round pick in a receiver, or that they end up going more for a veteran, more proven commodity, trading some draft capital to get someone like the, if not those guys exactly, then someone like them that would basically be plug and play guys?
Yeah, I think draft a guy. I mean, this is such a good and such a deep draft for receivers. You would hate to give up draft capital unless you, you know, unless you absolutely knew that Brandon Ayuk was going to sign for, you know, good term and money that you could afford, and that he wasn't going to be a problem, maybe that the way he's been a problem in San Francisco. So to me, you know, the Texans just did this with Stephon Diggs, and they basically lopped off the final years of his deal. They're basically renting him for 1 year. So, like, my question about the trade would be, what are you doing with Ayuk? Are you getting him just in the last year of his contract, or is this going to be a sign-in trade where you do business with him over the long term? Those are answers that we don't know right now. So I just think this draft is so deep at receiver. Just take advantage of the depth. If you don't get one at number 20, get one at number 51. Hey, it might even be deep enough that you can get a starting caliber player at number 84. I'm not saying that's going to be the case, but this is a very good, very deep draft, and I don't think it's out of the possibility.
Well, and receiver is one of those positions too, Ray, where, you know, you don't even have to necessarily be a starter to be productive. You know what I mean? And to contribute in some way when you have those multiple wide receiver sets. Other positions, that's not true. You only get one right guard, right? You only get one left tackle. Receiver, you got multiple guys on the field. So even if you're not the number two receiver, you can still do some useful things for this team. So I think that has to enter into the conversation as well. Let's talk about some of the guys that were mocked to the Steelers this week at that position. The first one was the Mel Kiper draft we talked about. He had Jalen McMillan from Washington, his second round pick. There seems to be kind of a wide range of opinions about him. Lance Zierlein, one of my, you know, favorite scouts, kind of has him as nothing special, something pretty ordinary, which I think the Steelers would want more than that in the second round. But there's a lot of multi-round mocks that have him as a solid second-round pick, which implies that he could be a very solid NFL player. What's your read on him, Ray, and how he could or should fit into the Steelers' draft plans?
Yeah, I mean, listen, Washington was loaded with good receivers. They have Rome Odunze, who's probably going to go in the top 10, if not the top 10, the top 15. And they have other guys, too, in addition to McMillan. Jalen Polk is another guy you see in the second or the third round. So they were stacked this year. As you mentioned, I was on Kiper's call, called him a shorthanded player. I don't have my notes in front of me, but I wrote it down. I think he ran a 4.47 at the combine, and I think there were some concerns in the NFL about his speed before the combine, but Kiper seems to think that maybe some of those concerns went away when he ran a 4.47. So, I mean, 4.47 isn't blazing, but I think, you know, it's plenty fast to get some separation in the NFL. So I don't see him in many top 50 lists. I don't really see him in many mock drafts in the second round other than Kiper's, but he did have a good combine, and, you know, maybe he changed some people's minds, with that performance out there.
Yeah, there was another mock this week, Ray, that had him at number 43, and I was surprised, just given that was your Lions scouting report, that, boom, another multi-round mock has him even higher than the Steelers taking him at number 51. Yeah. So I think he's going to be an interesting person to see how his stock plays out on draft day. Another name, Ray, is one I know that Brian Batko, our colleague, is very fond of. He's not really come up in a lot of mocks since the early days. It's Ladd of Georgia. I don't believe he's visited the Steelers yet, but obviously they had a ton of top brass down at that Georgia Pro Day. Do you see him as a guy who can fall to number 51, given his, you know, there's a lot of respect for his route running, his athleticism. It seems like he'd be a great projectable prospect, but if he falls to 51, do you like what he could offer the Steelers?
Yeah, I think he would be a great slot receiver. He can run every route in the route tree too. I don't want to pigeonhole him into being a slot receiver because he is very talented. He ran routes deep down the field for Georgia, was very successful doing that. But when you look at his measurables and, you know, his quick change of direction, I think he would be perfect, you know, operating over the middle of the field as well. So, I think he would certainly interest the Steelers. I know Mike Tomlin spent some time with him down at the Senior Bowl. You mentioned he hasn't been in for a top 30 visit yet, but that doesn't always mean everything. But to answer your question, no, I don't think he'll be there at 51. You even see him creeping into like late first round conversation now. If not late first round, then he's firmly established in the top half of the second round. So I think it would be a fortuitous turn of events if he was available. If he is, I think he would certainly be in consideration, but I don't expect him to be there.
Is he a guy you'd consider trading up for? Just like we were saying before, this draft is too deep and people, you're just going to do better going with someone else.
Yeah, so let's say, if you really feel strongly about him, there are so many good players in that second round range, right? Like they've had Malachi Corlean. They've had Ricky Pearsall in. All those guys kind of like in that second round range. Xavier Leggett has been in. So they feel strongly, I think, or they feel good about all those guys. So, you know, just thinking about it out loud, why would you trade draft capital to move up to get a guy when maybe there's similar guys or guys who are just as good that you can draft if you stand pat?
I agree, Ray. I just think it's a question some people are going to have when we praise a guy like that. So I thought it was worth talking through a little bit. MJ Devonshire was in this Chris Trapasso seven-round mock draft. Obviously, he's from Pitt, has some great history from the backyard brawl. Any chance you think he's getting a long look, given that we know the Steelers don't mind looking next door for some talent?
Yeah. Devonshire was a good player. He went to Kentucky first, made some big plays when he was at Pitt. You know, he's not considered a day one or day two prospect, but listen, you get him on day three, maybe you develop him. You know, they've had plenty of corners over the last several years who have been guys who have worked their way up from the practice squad to being like number four, number five corners. I mean, look how long they hung on to James Pierre. James Pierre wasn't really a guy they counted on within their defense, but he was so good on special teams that, you know, eventually he did earn a look at corner. Now, it didn't work out for him. He got beat. I think that was the Raiders game that they lost. I think I want to say that was Ben's last season, 2021, when he got an opportunity, didn't perform. They never really went back to him, but yeah, those day three picks, you know, those are all developmental guys. You know, stick them in there, see how they do in the preseason, and then most importantly, if they can play on special teams, they'll be on the roster. If not, maybe you can develop them on the practice squad.
Another interesting name from that Chris Trapasso mock, Ray, was Jordan Travis, the Florida State quarterback. Obviously a proven winner, had them on track to their undefeated regular season, has the devastating injury that you know, sidetracked the Seminoles and set off a lot of chaos in the college football world. Listen, the Steelers they have not figured out yet what's going to happen with Justin Fields and Russell Wilson after this season. Do you look at a guy like Jordan Travis as a seventh round pick late in the draft, a flyer type of guy that you would find attractive to bring in here, develop, see if he can, you know, be part of your quarterback conversation? I think it'd be hard for him to be like the unquestioned starter going into next season, but a guy that is a useful camp arm that can maybe play his way into being a part of the conversation.
Yeah. I mean, Travis, I mean, I don't really see him. He's probably a day three pick, right? I mean, I think they have two picks in the sixth round. So I think, listen, if they think he has some ability and he's nothing more than, a fourth arm in training camp, and maybe you want to develop him as your number three. Maybe he knocks Kyle Allen off the roster. Then sure, you know. But as we've talked about, Adam, you know, they need an inside linebacker for depth purposes. They need perhaps a safety. I know they've been scouting safeties pretty hard in the pre-draft process. So there's a lot of other positions that they could address before quarterback. But I never rule it out. Listen, if you believe in a guy, especially at that position, and you think maybe he's got some potential, then what's the harm in using a late round pick on him? But if I had to guess right now, as we sit here 2 weeks or so from the draft, I'm going to say they won't draft a quarterback at all in the first 3 days of the draft.
Fair enough, Ray. Anything standing out to you in some of the mocks you looked at this week? Those were all the questions I had for you.
No, I mean, listen, you know, Kuiper has some interesting picks on him. He's higher on some of these other offensive tackles than maybe some of the other draft analysts. He mentioned, you know, BYU tackle Kingsley Suamatea. He thinks he's maybe a late first round or definitely a second round talent. You don't see him in a lot of mocks. So just my point is there are a lot of good tackles in this draft. There are a lot of good receivers in this draft. And I think the Steelers are going to take advantage of both positions. I think whether it's in the first, second, or third round of the draft, I think they will take both a right tackle and a receiver, and they will get those positions straightened out, and they can work with those guys starting in May at OTAs.
Absolutely. Ray, thank you for joining me this week. I think we only got one of these left until it's draft week, and I think we might, you know, do some obviously draft-focused videos that week. But this is our last, I think, normal Saturday Steelers mock draft tracker. Until things are happening for real, it's kind of, you know, it always feels like a long slog, but here we are at the end of the process. I'm excited to kind of finally have something to chew on in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, absolutely. It seems like yesterday I was just at the Senior Bowl, and now these guys are coming in for pre-draft visits. So fun time of the year for me, and I know it's fun time of the year for the Steelers, our listeners and our readers as well.
Absolutely. So make sure you're subscribed to the channel. We'll have a lot more coming your way next week with Christopher Carter on the North Shore Drive. If you enjoyed this video, please like it. Help us out in the YouTube algorithm. We always appreciate that. And otherwise, we'll talk to you again in the same space, same time next week.
Thank you for checking out this content from Post-Gazette Sports. If you watch this video on YouTube, please like the video and subscribe to our channel. For all of the sports coverage the Post-Gazette has to offer, visit post-gazette.com.